we can just call you editor-in-chief of searchengineland.com, right?
That's it.
All right. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You called Wolfram Alpha impressive. What impresses you about it?
It's like a searchable world almanac, or it's like almost like a giant encyclopedia where you can do searches and get pages that show you charts and information about all sorts of different topics. And this kind of information was accessible before, but you'd have to know the right places to go to. So they've kind of compiled it all in one place. So it's sort of a neat way to warp drive your way to the right page on an encyclopedia in many cases.
I don't know. If Wolfram Alpha were a person, and I'm not talking about its inventor, it would seem to me like that person who's really good with numbers but has zero social skills. We tried to use it, and as long as you were asking a question that had some statistical or quantitative element, it was fine. If you asked, as I did, what was the difference between a poodle and a collie, it didn't have a clue what I was talking about.
Yes, and that's a key thing why anybody who assumes that this was going to kill Google, they were in for disappointment. It is more of an almanac or statistical type of thing, and even in those cases, it doesn't have statistics on everything. So if you're doing these kind of subjective queries or general knowledge types of things, you're probably going to be disappointed, and you'll be turning yourself back to Google.
They call it a fact engine, not a search engine, but I think it's a distinction that may be lost on the public and cyberspace.
It's really difficult for a new service to come out which looks like a search engine with a search box and then not have people anticipate that it should operate in the same way. So I think that that is going to be a challenge for them, that people will go there. They will do searches without thinking, oh, I should be searching for statistical information here, otherwise I'll be disappointed. So it may take some time for people to understand the difference. Some general searchers just may never get it. They may go over there, do a search, be disappointed, say, well, I'm done with that one.
Let's talk about your relationship with search engines. In the 80s, as a young college student, you'd go to the library for fun and do searching on the library electronic card catalog called Melville for Melville Dewey, who created the Dewey Decimal System. You searched Melville so much that you routinely crashed the system. What drew you to the search, and were your parents frightened?
It's ironic because I'm back at UC Irvine, which is where I went to school to do this search. And yes, that was in my first 2 or 3 weeks here. And I was a commuter. I would drive up for school. I didn't have a campus apartment at the time. And I just had time to kill on the campus. And I would be in the library. I always liked libraries. And I loved the idea that you could search for things on it. So I'd try to see how many books they had on the topic of history or love. And they had a lot, so many that they couldn't compute it. So I think I would crash my terminal. I don't know. I was just fascinated on doing those kinds of keyword searches. And then about 10 years later, when I started getting into the web, we were building web pages and websites for people. And I was fascinated as how the search engines were indexing them. People would ask me, well, why am I not ranking for this? And I started looking into it and discovered that some of the search engines at the time didn't actually crawl the web on a constant basis and stay refreshed, or that they didn't actually index all the words and all the pages as some people thought.
You're talking about things like, you know, Alta Vista.
Exactly. Alta Vista, the Lycos of the time, InfoSeek. And there wasn't a lot of good information that was out there. So my background was in journalism, so I just started writing about it, and it took off from there. It was an interesting topic for me and apparently other people as well.
I think interesting is an understatement. I mean, the cliche is that trying to get information on the internet is like drinking from a fire hose, right? But search is the way to navigate, the only way to navigate that torrent of data. Not to get too biblical about this, but it seems to be the organizing principle of the internet. Search is the prime mover, right? Everything seems to hinge on it.
It has certainly transformed us in a lot of ways. When the web first started, people didn't literally even have like a lot of short domains. So if you wanted to find a company, you really had to depend on search engines. And they improved those navigational queries. I want to get from you to this website, but I don't know the exact address, much better. We certainly went through a revolution with Google where they raised the relevancy stakes much higher, and suddenly you could search through billions and billions of pages and still find things. I mean, they're not perfect, and there's always room for improvement, but yes, you know, you tell these creatures, these search engines, these things that sometimes you wouldn't even tell people you know very close to you.
What I'm looking for, and I don't know whether you're of this bent, but I want somebody who knows as much about this as you, and I don't think there's anybody else, to give me the sort of philosophical idea of search and the internet. I mean, if you see cyberspace as a whole parallel universe, or a universe that will someday even subsume and absorb the real world, which I think could very well happen. Mm-hmm. If you read Ray Kurzweil, you think so anyway.
Sure.
So, I mean, given all of that, you can't go anywhere. You can't get off first base without search, right? I mean, can you sort of talk about not just how convenient it was? And I think it goes deeper than that, unless you think I'm just out to lunch.
Well, no, I mean, you certainly can get to information from sites that you know about. If you have a newspaper you take and they tell you there's more information about an article, you can navigate to it directly. But, you know, absolutely, search engines have this sort of gateway role. And in fact, it's one that as Google grows larger and larger, many people start to question whether or not it's something that should even be regulated because they have so much of a share and so many people go through them. I think the difficulty is that we search for metaphors to understand what a search engine is. So we'll say, well, it's like the Yellow Pages, except it's not just the Yellow Pages because you pay to be in Yellow Pages. So it's like the White Pages. But it's not just like the White Pages because you also kind of get a newspaper-style information that comes out of it as well.
Not to mention that it isn't organized alphabetically, but by notion.
Exactly. And so we try to find the right metaphors to fit it. I think that in 30 years what will happen is something new will come along and we'll try to explain this new thing using search engines as a metaphor. And then we will know that they've made it in our consciousness. Because we no longer reach for something else to explain what they are. We just understand what they are. And what they are is this gateway organizing tool to the web. It's your program guide in some ways for what's on the internet.
Another metaphor.
Yeah, exactly. Because even that's not right, because in some cases, you know, you're trying to search through everything you have. Program guide, here's what's on right now, but things are always on the internet.
When Google came around, did you foresee what it would come to be?
I didn't expect they'd become this popular. I wrote about them in 1998, and I remember, you know, having a line saying, well, the last time we had two guys from Stanford get together to do a search tool, they did pretty well, Yahoo. What I didn't anticipate was that the concept of search engines would be lost, and in fact, people would just talk about Googling things. Because at the time I was writing, people talked about search engines, and there were options, and a lot of people used different things, the InfoSeeks, the AltaVistas. And yes, people still use Yahoo, and they, to some degree, use Microsoft's Live Search, but, you know, Google has taken over as the Kleenex of the search engine world, and that's a stunning change for the company.
And now, a lament for the faded dreams of youth. You've written that you're more than a little jaded about search engines. Could you give us a list of failed search engines, and can you tell us if they have anything in common?
Oh, goodness. The best example that comes to mind was Cool from last year at CUIL, and this was started by some Google founders, people with a lot of knowledge about search engines, and they were going to build a much bigger web index than Google even had. And they were this sort of stealth startup. Nobody knew much about them, and so they built up the anticipations that were out there. And then they debuted, and even if they had more pages than Google, which was, you know, still a question that nobody ever like wanted to resolve, it didn't matter. You still couldn't get anything that was good. The results weren't very relevant at all. And so that was one example of where that kind of came in. Another example was, I would say, PowerSet, which eventually got purchased by Microsoft for, I think, $100 million last year. You would hear people talk about, well, they do this natural language stuff and buzzword, 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 and it's going to be fabulous and Google can't do anything like it. And it didn't actually relate to what people actually do. And I think that you have people who have great ideas that maybe overkill for what people need. Or sometimes they just have great ideas that they haven't actually taken and tested out really in real life, and they don't understand what a daunting task providing real solid web search is. What a lot of people don't realize is, you know, there are people who can dump millions of pages out onto the internet with the sole goal of simply tricking Google and trying to get to the top rankings. It's called spam, and it's a huge problem for the search engines, and, you know, Google has years of experience in understanding it and trying to fight it. Somebody new coming on has, you know, probably never even seen anything like it before, and that can throw them back.
But there are still software engineers staying up all night trying to create the next Google.
Definitely. They make tons and tons of money, so I don't think that's going to go away. I had done this one post where I talked about being jaded and also the idea on how not to overhype your search engine. Somebody got on to me saying, well, how can you overhype? Hype's bad enough. But what I was trying to stress in that was not that I didn't want people to be creative. I just wanted them to be smart. I wanted them to realize that they were almost certainly not going to come in and overnight beat Google. But they probably could put together a really good, useful service in a smaller area that maybe might take on and develop into something different. Twitter is an example of this. You know, they developed this service. They didn't really anticipate, I think, people wanting to search through what people were doing these short little messages about. But certainly they have this data that has picked up. Not a Google killer, but it's something that Google doesn't do well.
Yeah, that's a search of the zeitgeist in real time. That is unique.
Sure.
And maybe Wolfram Alpha's kind of fact-based searching is also different enough to survive, right?
Sure. Again, it's not that you have to have, you know, Google's billions and billions that you're earning to be a profitable business and be providing a useful service to people. The smaller services, they can do well.
A producer on our show said that what Wolfram Alpha does is it rewards knowledge with more knowledge.
That's a great way of putting it. Mm-hmm. I think the people who are most successful at using it are likely to be people who are experts in their own areas, who can say very specifically the kind of statistics that they're looking for and get that back. That's also, of course, part of its weakness. It's really been designed for experts. The experts so far had been using it, and now as people are actually getting to play with it who aren't trying to look for expert knowledge but more general knowledge, I think you get some of that disappointment of, wow, why doesn't it know this?
But if you're an expert in epic poetry, it isn't going to help you at all.
Right. You know, I probably should qualify, like, expert in things where you got lots of statistics, especially the sciences and mathematics. It seemed to be especially heavy in those kinds of areas where they brought in that kind of data. Now, maybe in a year from now, they'll bring in more data from other places. They certainly say they want to. And you know, perhaps that almanac will grow out more.
Google was one of those things that we didn't know we needed until we had it. I think a new search engine that could rival Google would also have to be essential in some way. What else do you think we need? Can you imagine what it is that we'll find essential when it finally arrives that we don't have?
I think the difficulty with Google is that what makes it essential is that it's one-stop shopping. It's like the Walmart of search. And it's very difficult to think of something that would be a mass audience search that would generate the volume of queries that Google handles. The one key area that we've seen emerge has been video search. And, of course, Google took care of that by buying YouTube. You know, I mean, many people are going to YouTube and they're searching for video. They're putting in these kinds of queries, and because YouTube hosts a lot of it, and because Google can also look beyond YouTube if they want to, it has turned it into, I think in the U.S., it's actually the second largest search engine that's out there.
YouTube is the second largest search engine?
Yeah. If you look at the number of queries by search engines, Google has a big chunk. But then if you look at the amount of queries that are actually happening just on YouTube, it actually outnumbers the queries that are happening on Yahoo, much less the number of queries that are happening on Microsoft. So there's a lot of actual search traffic that's happening out on YouTube. And that kind of makes sense. I mean, we consume a lot of video. We like to watch things.
Hulu is also doing quite well because it offers something different from YouTube.
The two are interesting to watch because Hulu is doing well in that it has a lot of this quality content, the broadcast content that people really want to see. YouTube has some of that. Legally, they have a lot of that that still gets on there illegally and gets pulled down, but people will still turn to it as well, especially if Hulu doesn't have it. And I think the question is, you've got these two different areas, and then, of course, YouTube has all this user-generated content that people do want to find. So at some point, you wonder, is Hulu going to say, you know what, you guys are handling so many queries over at YouTube and at Google. Yeah, we want you to be able to index what we have at our site as well because we want that traffic. But I think more time has to happen until Hollywood and Google are more comfortable with the concerns that have been going on with YouTube in terms of, you know, copyright.
What do you see as the future of search? Do you see another Google? Do you see something else as our lives are lived more and more online?
I don't see another Google coming in, say, the next 3 to 5 years easily. I just think they have such a huge leap over everybody else that it would be difficult for me to see that happening. I also suspect that we'll probably still see our search results look very much the way we're used to getting them now. I think we'll interact more with those listings. You'll see more thumbnail images. There'll be more opportunity for you to perhaps hover over a listing and see an overview of the page that you might be going to. Maybe we'll get more statistical displays that are showing up within it. I think that on some queries, we may see completely different changes. Like if you do a local query, most of the page will probably be occupied by a map. Google's already been down that road, and they'll probably make it even more so. Or if you've done a query that's related to a news event, rather than just giving you a few news items at the top, they may just simply give you all of them and then say, did you want something other than news? And then you could do your searches after that. That's part of where it'll go. It's just really hard to anticipate what new things will come up. I mean, again, going back to Twitter, the idea of real-time search was hard to anticipate because we didn't have a service that allowed people to put real-time information out there like that. So in 3 years, somebody may come along with another way of communicating or publishing information that we didn't have before.
You said something once that I just love. You've written that a good search engine needs to have good mouthfeel.
I'm glad that resonated. I had just looked at another search engine that is in development. It's called Blekko, BLEKKO.com. You won't see anything there but a holding page. But I had gone in and I looked at it, and it was interesting to me because I was playing with a demo and I wanted to keep playing with it, and it just kind of fit right or felt right. And that's where I realized, you know, when I look at these different search engines, it's almost like, I guess if you're tasting wine, not that I'm a big wine drinker, but I'm more a chocolate eater, or, you know, you eat a piece of chocolate or something and you think, oh, that feels right. I just want to keep eating it. It's just that mouthfeel to it. That's what kind of caught on with me. And so when I've looked at things like Microsoft, and they've diligently worked to build up their search engine, and there are tests that they've done, which I don't doubt at all, which is that if they take their logo off and they put the Google logo on their search results, people think, oh, those results are great, because the Google brand comes along. But for whatever reason, they just haven't caught on. And in part, it just seems to be that mouthfeel again, that they just don't have all the right elements that, for whatever reason, feel comfortable to me, or perhaps to some other people that are out there. And so it's, I don't want to say the je ne sais quoi or whatever, but, you know, maybe there is that kind of thing that happens with some new search engines, and Google kind of had it. And I think Yahoo still has it to some degree, but it's a hard thing to capture, as well as all the other things you need to do.
It's a kind of navigational ergonomics?
It could be. I mean, you know, Google spends a lot of time in trying to figure out how they should do their results. And it's interesting because you'll have a lot of designers come in and say, well, they're still kind of ugly. You should do it this way. Why don't you do it that way? And yet they test over and over information at Google. And perhaps some of these other services have been just too designed that, you know, they've done things that the designers think are actually going to work, but perhaps we prefer our search engine maybe a little more ugly and a little more Spartan.
What did you like so much about Blekko?
They had some interesting queries. I can't, because it's all, you know, mm-hmm. they're still like in their stealth, whatever, but mm-hmm. they had some interesting queries that you could do that you simply can't do on another search engine mm-hmm. that were fun, especially if you're into search engines. I liked some of the ways that they were displaying their information. It wasn't the same as Google, but it kind of felt right and played with it. So, you know, they'll have a big challenge when they come out. They're going to face the same issue. They, I think, have been very careful not to try to overhype themselves. In fact, they haven't said anything. But the fact that they haven't said anything already gets people kind of anticipating. And when they do come out, you know, people will think, well, are you going to be going after Google? And being a smaller service, they're not going to have coverage in some areas. They're going to still have relevancy issues. And people may, you know, want to say, well, forget it. You're not going to be able to compete as well. So it's a tough thing going after Google.
Google makes its determinations based on a sort of wisdom of crowds, public acclamation, as opposed to any other kind of measurement. Maybe we'd rather just know what everybody else is interested in than what the right answer is.
It's hard to say. I tend to think most people who are using Google probably aren't even aware of the underlying aspect of how it runs. They don't mm-hmm. know that there's this page rank. Then I tend to find that the more savvy you are about how Google actually makes its determinations, sometimes the more critical you are. You're uh-huh. like, well, you shouldn't count all these votes, or, well, that vote should be worth more than this vote over mm-hmm. here, or this thing shouldn't even be having votes mm-hmm. at all. I think if you're looking for this unconscious thing that happens with Google, it's more that it's your confidant, or that it's been your best friend over time, that you have continued to go over to it, tell it you're looking for things, and it says, oh, go to do this, or, hey, I hear your pain, try that, you know, and it's and it's always there for you, and it's pretty good in how it's responded. And so when you have a competitor comes along, it's very much like you have this new person who's saying, I want to be your best friend. And you're like, well, I kind of have a best friend. We're doing well. And, you know, they're like, no, come on, hang out with me. And you spend an afternoon with them, and perhaps you don't have that good of an experience. You kind of like, oh, I'm going to go back to my other friend, you know? Because with the other search engines, if you start using them, I think you're going to be much more critical, right? Because you're already measuring them up against the first relationship you have. And if they don't measure up and they fail you, you're like, yeah, okay, I'm out of here.
You said you were jaded. Now I know you're totally lying.
Maybe some other search engine will sweep me off my feet. We'll see. But it really is. I mean, do you recall using AltaVista? Or you know, people
I used AltaVista all the time. I was comfortable with that. I tried to use Dogpile because I knew it combined all those other ones. I found it worthless, and I kept going back to it because the idea of it seemed good. And also Lycos, I used that, but I kept going back to AltaVista. So I guess I liked that mouthfeel in the pre-Google days.
At the time when people were making this jump over to Google, and I would do sometimes classes, and I would say to people, what do you use? And it's like almost universal. People would always preface it, well, I used to use AltaVista, but now I use Google. And it was almost like people saying, I used to be married, but, you know, that didn't work out. And there was real pain in their voices. They didn't want to leave AltaVista. They really liked it. They just found something that was better. And it was inevitable that they had to move over. And it was true because Google was this improvement and AltaVista didn't keep up. But yeah, you know, I think there is that relationship factor, and you know, people like to stick with what's been working for them.
As I recall, AltaVista was also blue, almost the same shade as Google.
They might have been. And then they went through this period where they kept redesigning themselves, too, over and over again. It's the deck chairs on the Titanic mode. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's happening. Let's change everything up.
You're right. I didn't really want to give up AltaVista because it helped me find a clinical trial for my father when he was sick. And when I think back on it, I think it happened on Google, but it couldn't have happened on Google because it was 1997. So anyway, I have to go. The crowds are coming in. I'm just going to say, Danny, thank you very much.
Thank you again. I appreciate it. It's a good time.
Danny Sullivan is editor-in-chief of SearchEngineLand.com.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.